I would say that takeoff settings are probably the most important factor that you can work on in order to reduce unit on time.
What is parlor throughput? Why is efficiency in the parlor important? And how can we make sure that improvements in efficiency do not sacrifice milk quality? This episode is brought to you by the AABP Milk Quality and Udder Health Committee, and our guest is a member of that committee and a technical services veterinarian with Zoetis, Dr. Juan Rodrigo Pedraza. Stay tuned as we offer tips about how you can offer this service in your dairy practice. Welcome to our show, Rodrigo. Please introduce yourself for our listeners.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. My name is Rodrigo Pedraza. I'm a veterinarian from University of La Salle in Bogota, Colombia. Graduated back in 1988. I was in private practice in Colombia for 13 years doing equine and bovine practice. And then I decided to move my family out of the country because of safety reasons and came to the U.S. and went to the vet school in Virginia Tech and did an internship and a residency in food animal production management medicine. And after that, I joined Udder Health Systems up in the state of Washington, worked with Dr. Britton for 2 years. And after that, I was offered a position with Pfizer Animal Health, and I joined the company back in 2005, and I've been a tech service veterinarian for Pfizer Zoetis for almost 19 years right now. I've been deeply involved with milk quality for many, many years. I started doing it back in 1997 that I was a fellow for the Cochrane Fellowship and did a mastitis and milk quality training with Dr. Nelson Philpott. And right after that, I got the pleasure of being trained by probably two of the best milk quality experts in the U.S., Dr. Hank Spencer and Dr. Andy Johnson. And from then on, it was kind of like a really cool path to go through. And so right now, I'm part of the board of directors for NMC, and I'm also a member of the committee of milk quality and udder health with AABP. So as you can tell, pretty involved in all these areas.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to be part of our podcast today. We did do a podcast with Dr. Britton on mastitis diagnostics, which was a really cool show. And for our listeners, especially for our younger listeners, milk quality is just such an important thing to be involved with when you're on dairies. And I always appreciate it when someone that's been in the industry as long as Rodrigo, when you tell us who inspired you to be in milk quality, some of the giants in our industry. And so our older members, reach out to our younger members and get them involved in these fantastic consultation opportunities, whether or not you're in beef or dairy practice. It's certainly enjoying. And I'm very passionate about milk quality. I was heavily involved with that when I was in private practice and still very much enjoy it. So today we're going to talk about, you know, the parlor where the milk is harvested. And I want to start out, Rodrigo, by having you explain to our listeners, what is parlor throughput and why is that important?
Well, I think it's what most of the dairy producers are looking for every day of their lives. It's how many cows can they move through their facilities in a timely manner and every day of the week. The parlor can be pretty efficient or very inefficient in different ways. There are different things that we can talk about, and we're going to do it later today. But it's what the producers are trying to find out is how many cows can they move through the parlor efficiently without compromising milk quality.
you mentioned, you know, without compromising milk quality, which I think is important. So what are some of the risks, you know, if we maximize parlor efficiency, can milk quality suffer? And veterinarians should be aware of that before they make recommendations, I'm assuming.
Oh, of course, Fred. And that is a very interesting topic. And I really enjoyed talking about this one because there's a very fine line between throughput and milk quality. If you're trying to milk cows as fast as you can, you're going to compromise milk quality. There is no questions about it. And there's many different steps and procedures that we do in the parlor that will take time. So nowadays, we're building these monster parlors with 110 or even bigger than that wheels, for example, that are running at 4 seconds per stall. And we're thinking that probably prep time should be around 12 to 20 seconds. So how can you accomplish that if your cow is moving in front of you at 4 seconds per stall? So you're going to compromise milk quality. There is no way to go around it. Physiology, it's also another factor that we need to respect. We cannot change physiology even if we want to. It will get affected. Milk quality will get affected. You have to find that fine balance in between parlor throughput and milk quality so you can get, you know.
So let's start at the beginning of the milking process, which is getting cows from the holding pen into the parlor, regardless of what type it is. You know, we call that loading speed. Talk about some factors that might contribute to that.
Yes, there are different things. And one, it's thinking from the cow's perspective. So the cow's vision is quite different than ours. And the cow needs a very a clear space and light so they can see exactly where they're going to step on. Lining in those parlors, it's very important so the cows can see and also the operators can see what they're looking for and look at the cows from the right place. And also the flooring. And this is something that I find quite often in different places where either the floors are way too slippery or way too fine, or on the contrary, way too uncovered, so there's still quite a bit of rocks and things like that, and it's going to hurt the cows when they're walking in. So we want that loading time to be as quick as possible. Now, in order to get to that, obviously thinking about the lighting and thinking about the flooring, we need to know how to handle cows. So stockmanship is not something that people just learn on their own. We need to train our guys to move the cows in the right direction so the cows understand what the people want from them. So if we go against them, then we're just going to slow down that loading time, and that's going to affect throughput dramatically.
Yeah, stockmanship, very important for moving cows as well as for appropriate animal welfare and animal handling. So thanks for mentioning that. Let's talk a little bit now about some equipment. And first, Rodrigo, I'd like you to review what pulsation is, because some of our members are beef veterinarians and this is a refresher for them, but also what are our goals for pulsation, which should be considered when we're evaluating unit on time.
Great question. And Fred, this is one of those subjects that are sometimes a little difficult to understand because there is a lot of physics involved. And what pulsation really does is alternates vacuum with atmospheric pressure. And in order to allow vacuum to affect the teat so we can extract the milk, but allow some pressure from atmospheric pressure so we can decongest the tissue. So whenever we are applying vacuum, not only milk is coming down, but also the blood is coming down. And if we don't release that pressure, we're going to create too much congestion on the teat ends, and that's going to affect, teat end health, and it's going to slow down the milk flow. Now, what we usually strive for is to get the recommendations from the liner manufacturers, because those are the guys that can tell you what is the best combination of pulsation where their liners will perform the best. Now, in terms of pulsation, we have a few numbers to consider. One is ratio, which is going to tell you what is the percentage of time where you're applying vacuum to the teats or you're milking, and what is the proportion of that time where you're applying pressure, positive pressure, so you're resting that tissue. So, and during that time, the blood is just going to be able to go back up into the tissue, into the otter. And then the next number that we need to keep in mind is the rate. So it's how many times per minute we're having this type of cycle. So the milking and the resting time. Most of the pulsators nowadays will allow you to make changes. It actually very small changes. Some of them won't. And what we need to figure out is that the recommendation is to get a B phase, which is the milking phase, around 500 milliseconds, and the D phase, which is the resting phase, around 230 milliseconds. Now, this will give us a very well-balanced pulsation ratio, and it's going to give that cow enough time resting, so all that blood and those fluids will be able to go back up, so we reduce teat end congestion, and that way we're going to protect teat end health. So the A and the C phases are phases that are not very easy to change because they're more related to the liner design, either the liner material or the liner tension. So they're usually stay pretty steady, even if you change the ratios. So we pretty much have to play with the B and the D phases. And if we respect that ratio, we're going to be okay. So you can go way too aggressive to say ratios close to 70-30, which means 70% of the time is milking, 30% is resting. And those ratios are okay if all the other settings in the parlor are quite finely tuned. If they're not, you're going to affect teat end health. So we have to just play with too many different things in the parlor in order to make this safe for the cow.
Yeah, lots of factors to consider there. You mentioned a little bit about vacuum versus atmospheric pressure. And, you know, I know a lot of times producers always are asking, well, what should my system vacuum be? But I think we're really talking about teat end vacuum here. And I'd like you to comment on where you think teat end vacuum should be and how does that impact both teat health and our unit on time.
Yeah, so teat end vacuum, we usually talk that it should be anywhere between 10.5 to 12.5 inches of mercury. That is a very wide range. I don't think we should go around that low or that high, but it basically depends on the type of liner that you're using. So the liner manufacturer should provide a recommendation on where their liner works the best, and so we can move that teat end vacuum close to that point. Nothing really good happens to a teat end above 12.5 unless you have a really good milk flow. If the milk flow is going down, you have to keep in mind that whatever vacuum you have on the milk line, it's going to reach the teat end. So whenever you don't have that milk flow, that teat end is seeing what is on your milk line. So some systems will work. That is one of the beauties of working with a low line is that you can have low vacuums. So you use vacuum is strictly to extract the milk out of the quarter, and then everything else should happen by gravity. Once you have systems that are working at like midlines or high lines, now you have to move milk with vacuum, which is going to increase dramatically your vacuum fluctuations at the teat end.
Yeah, and those can be challenging systems to get to work properly for sure. You also mentioned a little bit about liners, or another word we use for that is inflations. What impact do liners have on teat health? But then do they also have an impact on parlor efficiency and milking speed?
Oh, absolutely, Fred. And unfortunately, there are thousands of different liners out in the market. It's impossible to keep track of all of them. What we need to do is just make sure that we have, you know, the on a speed dial, the manufacturer number, so we can call them up and see where their recommendations are. But the reality is that there are many different ways of making liners and many different materials. So you can make liners that are very fast milkers or liners that are slow milkers. For example, silicone liners are usually slow milkers, and sometimes you have to counteract that situation by increasing your vacuum. So vacuum, you obviously, if you increase the vacuum gradually up, you're going to increase milking speed up to a point, because if you pass that threshold, then you're going to move that liner so much higher that you're going to create a ring at the base of the teat, and that's going to create a congestion, and that's going to create a restriction on the milk flow as well. So liners have to be found depending on the type of cows that you're milking, different liners for different cows. So you should not use the same liner for Holstein cows or compared to Jersey cows, for example, because of the teats are completely different. The size of the teats are different. So you have to find and choose those liners based on measurements that should be assessed on your herd, so the liners are well adjusted to your cows.
I think that's a great point, Rodrigo, because oftentimes I found when I was in practice and I was looking in parlors, dairymen, they want to know what liner should I use, and there's so many different ones, and I always like to test the liners on their cows. So I would encourage our members that if you are interested in doing parlor analysis, that is a really good tool to have in your toolbox to be able to go in there and evaluate how those liners are working on their cows, because that's an easy thing. Liners are an easy thing to change, and it's sometimes difficult to change some of the other things we want to in the parlor. So appreciate that. The other thing that many parlors have now are automatic takeoffs. Let's talk a little bit about takeoffs. You know, sometimes they're set to over milk cows, which has a negative impact on milk quality and unit on time. So what are some goals that you look at for takeoff settings? And then how can veterinarians assess takeoffs?
I would say that takeoff settings are probably the most important factor that you can work on in order to reduce unit on time. By default, most of the manufacturers will mount their takeoffs with really dry settings. When I'm saying really dry settings, that means that it's staying on the cow way too long, extracting the last drop of milk. That was some of those things that we thought many, many years ago, that you had to extract every single drop of milk out of the cow, otherwise she would get mastitis. Well, now we know that's not true. Milk gets produced 24 hours a day. It's not just 30 minutes before milking time. So if that was the case, every single cow would have a mastitis case every single day. So whenever we are getting to the end of the milking process, extracting that last pound of milk, for example, is going to take way too long, and it's going to create more negative impact on the teat ends than what leaving a little bit of milk will do on the cow. So it's been documented several times that leaving up to 400 cc's in the udder, it sounds like a lot of milk, but it doesn't affect either milk production, or it doesn't affect somatic cell count. Now, the only way to measure that is doing a strip yields. And the way to do it is just as soon as the unit comes off of the cow, then somebody's going to strip each quarter around 15 seconds per quarter. Make sure that you get even distribution from all quarters, because if you're getting, to give you an example, 300 cc's out of one quarter, that means that quarter didn't get milk correctly, and all the other three were pretty dry. Now, you measure that on a measuring cup. And if you're getting up to 400 cc's, that's good. If you're getting more than that, that means that you have to adjust those takeoffs to get them a little bit drier. But if you're getting less than that, that means that you're over milking those cows. Now, the cows, you have to keep this in mind. The cows get trained very quickly. And I have parlors where we have the takeoff settings set at 3 pounds per minute. And when you do strip yields, we don't get any milk out of those cows. So they learn to get milk very fast. But the key here is that, yes, strip yields are pretty low, but the time that that cow is on low flow, it's minimum. It's going to be 3, 4, 5 seconds, not 20, 30, or a minute that we can see in some places.
And when you're measuring that low flow, Rodrigo, are you just visually looking at the bowl as the milk flow slows, or are you also using equipment to do that?
Yes, that is a really good question, Fred, and both. Obviously, not everybody can afford to have a very fancy equipment like a LactoQuarter. Not all the people can use a Vadia, for example, to address that, or a TriScan. But we have different tools that we can use if we wanted to use any electronics. So if you were using the LactoQuarter, you can see exactly where the flow is going. But if you were using, for example, the Vadia, that's not going to show you the flow, but it's going to show you how the vacuum performs on the mouthpiece. So as the mouthpiece gets a higher vacuum, that means that you're getting low milk flow. So you can extrapolate that information and say, okay, from this point on, we're over milking the cow because the flow is pretty low. Now, obviously, not everybody has all those fancy tools, but there's nothing better than the eyes and your ears in the parlor. So look at what's going on in the bowl. And if you see that there is milk just sliding on the walls of the bowl, that means that cow is done. And if that stays there for a long time, you're over milking the cow.
Good tips there. And while you mentioned the Vadia, I think that is such an important tool. If you want to utilize and do some parlor analysis, that's a really good tool to buy. And I think it's really cool about mouthpiece vacuum. Can you re-explain what is that mouthpiece vacuum? Where is that measured? And then how does that change over time? And do you compare that to the teat end vacuum? What are you doing there when you're looking at those graphs?
Yes, you're going to mouthpiece vacuum is if you look at the liner, there is a little chamber right under the mouthpiece. And that's where we're going to install a port so we can measure the vacuum. You can use the Vadia for that, or you can also use a TriScan or any other device. You just have to put a port right there so you can measure it. And then you're going to see also the claw vacuum. Either you put it on the short milk tube, right on the short milk tube, or you can stick a needle inside of the bowl. Or sometimes people are using liners that they don't want you to put any needles in the liners, then you're going to have to use a T right at the outlet of the bowl or the cluster. So that way you can measure both. Now, the mouthpiece vacuum, it's usually low when you have flow. And when I'm saying low, it's around 4 inches or lower than 4 inches of mercury. And as the milk is flowing and the teat is engorged, you have some kind of a seal between the liner and the teat skin. But when you don't have any flow, then the teat is going to kind of elongate, and the vacuum is going to reach that vacuum that you have on the bowl or on the cluster is going to be the same as the vacuum on the mouthpiece. Whenever that happens, that means you don't have enough flow. One way of looking at that is that if that happens at the beginning of the milking time, that's what we call a bimodal letdown, which means that you have a little bit of flow because you're extracting milk out of the gland cistern. And then as that disappears because you don't have all the alveoli being squeezed and all this milk coming down, you're going to have a dry period. Whenever you have that dry period, you're over milking the cow. So you're going to see it with the Vadia, or if you measure that with the dry scan, that your mouthpiece vacuum go up. And then as the peak flow starts coming, or your milk flow starts coming down, then you're going to see that vacuum dropping down again. And at the end of the milking process, if the milk starts slowing down, then you're going to see your mouthpiece vacuum to go up again.
And I've heard that described as over milking at the beginning of milking. You've already described over milking at the end, which is intuitively obvious where you're just milking the cows too dry. But over milking at the beginning of milking, where you have that disparity in the vacuum, what are the impacts both in terms of unit on time, which is going to affect our throughput, as well as what are the impacts on udder health?
Okay, so basically what I've seen after graphing thousands and thousands of cows with a lactocorder, for example, is that whenever we graph a cow that is bimodal, you're not going to see the flow going on a plateau on peak flow. So what you're going to see is those cows are going to be some kind of a peak, and that's going to elongate your unit on time. Now, the thing that is pretty interesting is there was a paper that was published just a few years ago, I think 2019, by Dr. Erskine, and they were doing a lot of cows with Vadias measuring vacuum, and what they found that those cows that had a delay let down up to 60 seconds will lose 7 pounds of milk. Fred, that is a lot of milk. So what we thought many years ago is that, okay, yeah, bimodal letdown is bad because you're over milking the. But it's not just that. There is a lot of milk and a lot of money involved in bimodal letdown. So whatever we have to do to get that better, so we lose those cows at the beginning and you're elongating your unit on time, and that's not good, or the percentage of cows being bimodal in the parlor, the better for the milking parlor, the better for the producer.
And I'm sure that a lot of veterinarians have experienced the frustration of when we're talking about parlor throughput, efficiency, and unit on time, what some producers do is they stop the pre-milking routine, either sanitation or stripping prep. That's not going to have the effect that they want. Is that correct? Because they're going to not get those peak flow rates. They're going to have more bimodal milking. Is that typically what you see, Rodrigo?
Absolutely. I have been in parlors where they don't do pretty much anything at, you know, in front. So they just kind of like wipe those teats or apply their the pre-spray or the pre-dip, and then just wipe it off. And there's no stimulation of those teats, and you're going to see percentages of cows being bimodal up to 60 to 70%. Now, if you do the math, that is thousands and thousands of pounds of milk that you're just dropping down the drain. So apparently what's happening here is that oxytocin, it has a pretty short life. So if you don't take advantage of that, you're going to lose milk production. So that's how those cows lose milk production. Now, in my opinion, every single cow should be stripped, before milking, for two reasons. One, the most important one, in my opinion, is the stimulation, so we can avoid that bimodal letdown, and we can get that cow that signal that, hey, we're ready for the milk to come. And the second one is because it's the only way to find mastitis in those cows, clinical mastitis. If you're not stripping, you're not going to be able to find it. So you're going to keep cows that are mastitic. So you're putting mastitic milk in the tank, and plus you're keeping them in the parlor because you don't find them.
And let's talk a little bit about those milk flow rates that you measure with the lactocorder. What are your goals for where do you want to see that peak milk flow rate?
Okay, that peak should happen in the first 30 seconds, and we should get up to at least nine pounds per minute. So in the first 2 minutes of milking, you should be harvesting at least 15 pounds of milk. Now, With the way milk production is going in our industry right now in the U.S., the numbers are probably higher than that, because we're getting herds that are milking at 100 pounds per cow per day. So if you don't get that flow quite fast, your unit on time is going to be super long. So I have seen with the lacto-quarter cows milking at 17 pounds per minute, but I have also seen cows that only reaches probably 6 pounds per minute, and that's kind of the average in the part in the herd. And those are usually the herds where they don't do stripping or where they don't do a good milking routine.
That makes sense. I'd also like to talk about how can we evaluate that that goals for flow milk after it leaves the teat. And so, you know, once we're you know, have harvested that milk out of the teat, what can we evaluate?
Okay, that will be most likely the milk path, Fred, and that's probably the one of the most important parts in the parlor, and you don't need any equipment to evaluate that. So what I teach people whenever I go to the parlor and they want to learn about how to evaluate a parlor is that you only need your fancy tool for a few things. Your eyes and your ears are going to do the most. Now, you just need to look at the milk path. Is it going in the right direction? Is unit alignment okay? Are those cows getting milked sideways? Is that hose, for example, too small or too big, too heavy, and not being handled correctly? So if you look at this, for example, many, many years ago, I would say probably 20, 30 years ago, we used to milk cows with hoses that were 9/16. If you try to milk a cow today with a 9/16, you're not going to be able to do it correctly, because there is no way you can unload all that milk with a hose that small. Now, we still milk a lot of cows with 5/8 right now. In my opinion, that is getting a little too small for the cows that we're milking today. I think most of the parlors should be built on 3/4. And even if it was higher than 3/4, the 7/8, even better. But the 7/8 has some caveats. It's way too bulky and way too heavy. So if you don't have good support for those hoses, it's going to create some more problems. Okay, so then on hoses, probably most of the cows should be milked at least on 3/4-inch hoses. We should not have any loops on those hoses, because whenever you have to apply vacuum to move milk, because you're going to create a slugs if you have a loop, then you're going to create a higher milking, vacuum pulse fluctuation on the teat ends, and that's not good for the cow. That doesn't necessarily create a higher risk of mastitis, but it's going to create a higher risk for liner slips. And if you have liner slips, that will increase the risk of new cases of mastitis. So everything gets interconnected. Now, restrictions are something that you just look at them. And sometimes you get some of those pinch valves, and they never get moved from the place they get located, and they will create memory on any type of liner. People will come and tell you, my liner doesn't have that problem. I don't think so. Any liner that has been pinched every single day, hundreds of times per day, it's going to create memory. And whenever you get that memory, you're decreasing the size of the diameter of that hose inside. So now you are causing a tremendous restriction. So now instead of having a 5/8 hose, now it's way smaller than that. So unloading that milk is going to be very inefficient, and that's going to slow down your milking process.
Great tips about what can happen in the parlor, Rodrigo, but probably one of the most important things in the parlor are the employees and the milkers that are harvesting that milk. So talk a little bit about, you know, what employee factors should we consider when we're evaluating those parlor procedures, both in terms of milk quality, certainly, as well as parlor throughput.
Yeah, so I think the milking procedure is another one of those factors that will accelerate or actually go in the other direction and decrease your throughput dramatically. We need to find a way to milk those cows consistently. That's what the cows really like, is consistency. And we need to respect their physiology. And when I'm saying respecting the physiology is that if you look at a calf that is nursing out of a cow, let's say a beef cow, a beef calf, when she starts nursing from that cow, and then she's pretty happy the first few seconds, and then all of a sudden she starts hitting the cow. And the reason for that is because there is no letdown yet. So that physiology, we cannot change it. We have to stimulate the cow. We have to wait enough time. So that's what we call the prep lag time. As after stimulation, we have to wait those 90 to 140 seconds, depending on lactations and depending on some other factors. And because that's going to give that cow enough time for the signal to go from the teat up to the hypophysis. And then oxytocin is going to get released and oxytocin will flow through through the blood and get to the myoepithelial cells that are surrounding the alveoli, and then we're going to squeeze those alveoli and we're going to get milk let down. It takes time. We cannot jump through that. So we're going to have to respect what the cow needs. Now, handling, as we said at the beginning of the talk, it's the key, because if we're mishandling the cows, we're not treating them well, they're going to release adrenaline, and adrenaline is going to stop that oxytocin from reaching those alveoli, so we're not going to have milk let down either. So treating the cows the right way, respecting the timing, doing the right stimulation on those quarters so we get the best signal so the cow releases enough oxytocin, it's probably the key. Now, there is no one milking procedure for everybody, because it depends on how many people you have in the pit, how big is the parlor, how many cows are you milking through it, is it a rotary parlor, is it a parallel parlor, is it a herringbone. So all of those factors will affect the way you design your milking procedure. You have to think about cow comfort and you have to think about human comfort. You got to remember, these guys are milking cows in some places for 12 hours a day. Most of those are milking, 8, 10 hours a day. That is a very intense job. And we need to think about those operators that are doing the job.
Agree completely. We can really help on a lot of dairies, by speaking for the cow as well as those milkers too, Rodrigo. Finally, Rodrigo, I'd like to ask you, how can veterinarians become more involved with this topic, parlor procedures, monitoring parlors, and just milk quality and parlor throughput in general?
Yeah, I think, Fred, this is something that always called my attention, and I think a lot of times it's just fear that we don't feel comfortable in the parlor. We don't want to get those questions that we don't know the answers for, and so unfortunately we see a lot of veterinarians, they just walk into the parlors just to wash their boots before they leave or right when they walk in. But the parlor is not that difficult. I don't think everybody needs to carry a fancy tool in their car. I think their ears and eyes, as I said before, are really important, and they can solve a lot and a lot of problems. So just walk into the parlors, look at the milking procedures, use your stopwatch and do some timings and see if the guys are consistently doing what they're supposed to be doing. Ask questions to the managers, and trust me, Fred, I've seen this so many times. I ask the manager or the owner, so what are they supposed to be doing? And they give you, the whole speech about what the procedures should be, and you go into the parlor and they're doing something completely different. And you go like, oh, okay, well, I guess somebody didn't read the message, correctly. So we just need to be able to communicate with those guys, with the milkers, and say, okay, this is what we want. And probably one of the most important things that I have learned over the years, and obviously it helps me to speak Spanish, especially in this country that we have so many Spanish speakers in those positions, is training them and letting them know why we're doing what we're doing. It's not just something that's mandatory. You have to do this because you have to do it. No, if they understand why, things go in a completely different way, and you can really accomplish a lot of good things when you explain to these people what they need to do and why.
That is a great tip, Rodrigo, and I couldn't agree more that explaining why those procedures need to be done in terms of both milk quality and parlor throughput certainly is very important to get done what you want to get done. Thank you so much for participating in this podcast. It's been really great. I love milk quality. And when I was in practice, I loved evaluating parlors. I started off with the stopwatch and progressed up into having all the fancy tools. It is a great investment for your practice too, if you want to learn those things. I want to encourage our listeners that if you are interested in milk quality and udder health and you're an AABP member, we're always looking for volunteers for our milk quality and udder health committee, which Rodrigo is a member of, and he's a previous chair of that committee. Our current chair is Dr. Pam Rugg. You can just go to that page on our committee page on our AABP website, and there's a button there you can email if you're interested in joining the committee. They've got a lot of really cool projects going on right now to get some resources into the hands of our members. Soon we will have our selective dry cow therapy guideline available, and they're also working on an extensive resource about how veterinarians can become involved in milk quality on dairy farms. And how did I learn how to do this stuff? I learned how to do this stuff at AABP, taking seminars and classes from Andy Johnson and other colleagues. So if you're interested in learning how to evaluate parlors, we often have a seminar at AABP, and you will be able to go home and implement these skills into your practice. It's a great practice builder. When I started doing it, the equipment dealers did not like me. And by the time I left practice, they quit testing parlors and just referred clients to me. And then I told them what needed fixed. So it can be a really good relationship in your community to offer these services. And then finally, you heard Rodrigo say that sometimes veterinarians only get in the parlor when they're washing their boots. And if you have a producer that asks you about their clinical mastitis rate or their somatic cell count or other problems related to milk quality, and you've never seen the milk harvested on that farm, you're not doing a full consultation and you're not going to get to the bottom of the problem. So really encourage each of you to get into the parlors of your clients on a routine basis so you can see and troubleshoot and identify problems as well as prevent them in the future. That's what veterinarians are bring their real value to farms. So Rodrigo, thanks again for participating in this podcast with these really great tips. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, Fred. I truly enjoyed it, and I hope it was useful for all the audience. I'm always open to questions or to consultations, and at AABP on the website, you can find my email. And if I can help anybody to become a little better on this subject, I will be more than happy to help.
I really appreciate that, Rodrigo. That's how we pay it forward and get our members to get involved in these things. So thank you so much. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You do the same. Thank you, Fred.